This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Well, it is stunning to think the Olympics are behind us. It was actually a really good window. I enjoyed the whole season.
I loved it.
Did you have a favorite moment?
I had two favorite moments.
Okay. By the way, let me just be clear. Ron Culver's dialing in here. His favorite moment was the Army of Beauties. He really liked the North Korean cheer crowd.
Who doesn't? I think I'm obligated to say that. I don't want to start a, you know.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with conflict. That. Just go with it, Ron.
I'm sure you have a higher-minded favorite moment for the Olympics, Carla.
I have two.
Please.
One, of course, how can it not be the U.S. women's hockey team?
Incredible. That great win.
3-2 shootout win over Canada, their nemesis. I mean, they despise each other because Canada has owned them in Olympic play.
Yep.
But this is the coolest thing that maybe – you probably do know this because you know everything. But do you know that that victory was 38 years to the day since the miracle on ice in 1980?
Yes, it's just amazing. Isn't that great?
That is so cool.
Same day.
That's not an accident. And then my other moment was, well, loved Lindsey Vonn. Just her whole, not even a specific moment, because she didn't even end up, you know, being able to finish for the combined, but just her overall pure joy and appreciation for the Olympic Games.
And I think part of that's born out of the fact that she's had to recover from so many injuries. She's really worked hard to get to just the chance to compete.
At 33 years old, to be the oldest woman to medal in a downhill was so impressive. And I think there's the difference between the new and the old. Michaela Schifrin versus Lindsey Vonn. Michaela Schifrin hasn't had adversity. Lindsey Vonn has had plenty.
Well, she certainly has, but there are different injuries.
Yeah.
Did you have another favorite moment you wanted to cite, Ron?
Oh, of course I do.
You were looking at me like you had something
it's
profound
the
to say.
I can see it on Ron's face.
I'm a sucker for curling, but my favorite moment was cross-country skiing.
Wasn't that amazing?
One of the great calls, too.
With a five-time Olympian, the Keegan Randall.
And it was her swan song.
Oh.
Incredible.
From Alaska. That was cool.
Well, with the Olympics behind us, we get to look ahead now. MLB. About to get underway. We're in the midst of spring training. We will take a hard look at the MLB. In fact, we're going to take a look at who the top five players are in MLB. When we return, you're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
So are you getting fired up for baseball? I mean, the season's here. It's sort of here. We're not that far away from opening day, and the Olympics are behind us. It's
this
time to talk baseball.
No vacation for sports. It's just the best. Olympics just ended. Spring training games going. 2 months till the NBA and the NFL draft. I love
March Madness looming on the horizon.
March Madness right around the 2 weeks till selection. Less than 2 weeks till Selection Sunday. It's all good.
Well, it's sort of fun. Sports Illustrated came out with their rankings of the best players in MLB. And, of course, when you create a list like this, it's almost impossible because you can't really compare players of different positions. How do you compare an everyday player to a starting pitcher to a reliever? But they've done it. And, of course, we do it in the NFL as well. We come up with the top 100 players in the NFL where we try to compare or rank players across different positions. Sports Illustrated has done it with some, great players. I mean, it's a good list. I could argue a few names one way or the other. But let me read you the top five and solicit your reactions. They've got number one, a guy named Mike Trout. How about that? Number two, Altuve. Number three, Chris Bryant. Number four, Max Scherzer. And number five, Joey
Votto.
Votto, yeah. He's the first baseman of the Reds. So that's a good group of those five. Any disagreements there?
You know, I can't disagree that these guys are tip-top in Major League Baseball, no doubt. I am confused at the Trout-Altuve situation, and I am a big Mike Trout fan for sure. But he missed a lot of the season with the wrist injury. Altuve is the reigning AL MVP.
Yep.
He is a reigning batting champion. He is a reigning World Series champion. And it goes on and on and on. You know, he batted 346, 81 RBIs, 24 home runs. How can Mike Trout be above Altuve at this point? I'm confused by that.
I won't argue with you there. I'm sitting in Houston,
they're both
Texas.
Great. I mean, we're talking splitting hairs.
We are splitting hairs. It's sort of funny to me. I was thinking about this, though. It just feels like Altuve is a brand name, a household name across MLB, hasn't been as prominent for as long. I think there's a baking cycle here, gestation that needs to happen still for him. And I know the Astros just won the World Series. He was the focal point of that. He was the MVP of the season. But he just, I don't know, playing in Houston, that he's built that same level of household name. But we're now picking between one and two. So,
well, and it's also, Mike Trout came into the league as anointed already. And
yes, he has
lived up to that billing. Yep. I mean, he's had some injuries, but he is a phenomenal player. I mean, he really is. And he's young and got that on his side. Whereas Altuve, at, you know, small in stature, not given much chance, he came in without expectations. So I think that does make a difference to what you're saying, like being a household name or just already coming in at the top, which is a little bit what Shohei Ohtani is dealing with right now.
Okay, so the next five names on the list, Mookie Betts, the great outfielder for the Red Sox, Kershaw, Nolan Arenado, the third baseman of the Rockies, Carlos Correa of the Astros, like Paul Goldschmidt of the Diamondbacks, and then Corey Kluber. So interestingly, the first pitcher on the list is Scherzer of the Nationals, Kershaw the number two pitcher, Kluber the number three pitcher.
Yeah, those are great. I don't like pitchers being on this list. I just don't like them mixed in with position players.
Right.
I really don't.
Hard to compare a guy who plays one out of every 5 days with an everyday player.
Right, absolutely. But you know what's interesting? You have not yet mentioned Bryce Harper, who is the biggest free agent talk for next year.
Yep.
You know, represented by Scott Boras, and it has been known for several years that, you know, 26-year-old highly touted Bryce Harper should claim in the neighborhood of $300 to $400 million contract, you know, 10-year next year. And yet you have gone through the top 11 players on SI's list and he has not been mentioned. We're going to give a guy $300 to $400 million and he hasn't made the top 11.
All right, but he's ranked number 12 on this list.
He is ranked number 12. But I think there's a lot of pressure on Bryce Harper. You know, he's with a Nationals team who gets to the playoffs but can't quite crack that to the next level.
Yep.
And they've got a lot of talent but just can't, you know, they're changing managers every other year, which is a bit crazy. But now I think because Harper's going to be a free agent next year, the pressure is on for him to have a season like he had in 2015. If he wants to be able to claim those top dollars that Boras is promising.
Well, if he does, at his young age, he will get a huge contract. Mm-hmm. Boras will be just ecstatic to take him to market. It will be an historic payday.
Sure, sure.
Now, interestingly, they've got 13 and 14, two Yankees. Can you name them? I mean, this is a 1-2 punch of historic proportions.
Could it be Stanton and Judge?
Stanton and Judge. That lineup for the Yankees looks like it's going to have a great deal of power.
They always have a great deal of power. Wow. They are just star-studded top to bottom.
From my old Red Sox days, that duo reminds me of when they had Manny Ramirez and David Ortiz back-to-back. But this looks like Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. I mean, this is a really good duo for those Yankees.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting.
And then just to jump down a little bit, there is another Astro at number 19 and another Astro at number 27. Justin Verlander finishes at 19, Springer 27. So the world champion Astros have four of the top 27 teams, 27 players on this list.
And I agree with the players they've got on there. I like it.
That's a good group. The Red Sox finish with Betts at 6. They've got Chris Sale, their outstanding starting pitcher, at number 20. Mm-hmm. So they've got two in that top group, two in the top 20. Yankees with the two of Stanton and Judge. So it's a pretty good roundup. It's hard to argue with these lists. They picked up an extraordinary roster of guys.
Yeah, they really did. It's just, you know, mixing around that order. We'll just have to see.
Okay, one guy not on that list, Shohei Ohtani. He is the phenom. He is the Japanese pitcher/hitter. He is the modern-day Babe Ruth. He is coming over and actually had a tough spring debut, and there were all kinds of alarm bells went off. The media overreacted to it.
From the mound when he was pitching, right.
Yes, spring debut pitching. That's correct. So I think was just almost comical. He's a 23-year-old right-hander. He threw some nice pitches. His fastball hit 97 miles an hour, but he also struggled with his command. He allowed two runs. One of them was earned in one and a third innings. So not a great debut in spring training for Ohtani, but it's early.
It's early, and his debut lasted an inning and a third, which was about 20 minutes. So everybody, chill.
We can't write him off yet?
You can't write him off yet because he's only 23. He's coming over here, so he's used to playing catch in front of the dugout between innings, like during the game. And so he was saying, you know, through a translator, you know, I got cold. I mean, you're not allowed to do that in Major League Baseball, so he couldn't do that. And also, you know, even before the Angels signed him, they knew about this. He has a strained elbow ligament, so that could play into it somewhat a little bit. But here's the deal. There are the expectations on Ohtani. They are giant, and they are worldwide. In Japan, in the United States, everybody's watching this kid. So the blessing is that he's got this incredible two-way ability to pitch and to hit.
Yep.
The curse is he's got huge worldwide hype that comes with that. But he did have his hitting debut tonight, and he had an RBI single and two walks in his spring training debut against San Diego.
Oh, that's news to me. That's
so,
very cool.
Yeah, that's new. And so, you know, right now they're going to use, I think the Angels will use him as a DH in like the second position. So he did well tonight from hitting. Give the kid some time. He just got here. I mean, come on.
Well, I love the thought that there could be a starting pitcher that you would actually want to have hit. It would be a very exciting thing for the game
awesome.
Of baseball.
Yeah, it'd be really great.
As I said, I think it was last week, but if it would be like Deion Sanders when he played both ways. He could play cornerback. Mm-hmm. He could play wide receiver. To have a two-way player in football, to have effectively a two-way player in baseball, I think would be very, very exciting to watch. So I'm going to be a big fan of his and root for him this year.
Me too. I am too. A lot of pressure on him, so... Glad he had a good debut with his hitting tonight. That's great.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Dan Shonka. He is of Our Lads, the draft expert team, and we're going to ask him all things about the draft. We're going to ask him, what will those Browns do with the number one and the number four pick overall in the first round of the upcoming draft, which is just a couple
months
away. Yes, a little bit less than 2 months. It will be Dan Shonka when we return.
This is the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
At O'Reilly Auto Parts, you're guaranteed to get the very low price on the parts you need. The guaranteed low prices ensure that you're always getting the best deal. In fact, they'll match any local auto parts store's price on any item. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices. Every day. Now, joining us on SB Nation Radio is Dan Shonka of Our Lads. Go to ourlads.com for the best draft coverage. Dan, welcome to the show with David and Carla.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be with you tonight on almost Combine Eve, I guess we'd say.
That's right. The Combine, and which so affects these mock drafts. I actually really enjoy mock draft season. I've probably read every mock draft that's out there. I certainly go to ourlads.com to see what you guys are covering. Could I begin with the Browns, because they've got so much opportunity this draft. They have the first and the fourth pick overall. Then they've got the three picks in the second round. How do you see the draft unfolding for the Cleveland Browns?
Well, I'll tell you what, David. I think that this is really second round type draft. The second round is super loaded. I mean, you know, you can go right on down the line, and the running backs are going to be available, and the offensive linemen and things. But the Browns are setting pretty. I mean, they should get all four right off the bat, because they got the two early second round, and then they got a later second round, and then you got obviously one and four. So, it depends. Now, if they sign a free agent quarterback, which I know is a long shot, they could walk away with a guy like Barkley at one and possibly Minka Fitzpatrick at four.
Yep.
And, plus have your free agent quarterback, and then go ahead and start collecting your second round picks. And I think that would really help them a lot. you know, if they go a quarterback, our top guy is Baker Mayfield. I've loved him since last summer and have followed him for the last 3 years. And his consistency and his Drew Brees-like play is endeared him to us. And we think he's a terrific player. And so we got in our mock draft, the one we had a couple days ago, where put up his first, that's actually the first one we've done. You know, we put Barkley as the top guy at one. And then if they don't go free agent quarterback, we put Baker at Mayfield at four.
Well, Dan, so Cleveland has said this week they're not really enamored with any of the top quarterbacks, seeing that they passed on Carson Wentz, they passed on Deshaun Watson, and their last first-round quarterback was Johnny Manziel in 2014. Do we believe that they're not really enamored with these guys, or are they just, this is a smokescreen, and what would you do if you're Cleveland?
Carla, I think that I understand what they're saying, though. You know, you keep hearing, wow, this is going to be a great quarterback draft and all that stuff. And, well, there's quality. I mean, there's quantity of quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But the quality, I mean, you can shoot holes in every one of these guys. And you know, it's just obviously the thing that we look at on quarterbacks, you've got to make great decisions and you got to be accurate. And that's why we had Baker go to the head of the class. And then, you know, I mean, there are guys like Josh Allen, they're just not accurate, you know. I mean, they're all over the place. And then as is Lamar Jackson, who's a little bit, you know, farther down the line. And then
Sam Darnold, frankly.
Yeah, he's like a cow on ice. You know, you see his footwork. I mean, he's sliding all over the place. And he just, you know, and you can't turn the ball over 22 times. You know, you just can't do that. And he threw right into coverage on a regular basis. And so, yeah, the Browns, you know, I think they got it right. They're probably not enamored with these guys because there's, you know, they look like Swiss cheese. And Baker, that's why I think Baker Mayfield kind of rises to the top because of his accuracy, his decision-making, his feet are always under him. He's got great anticipation. I mean, he throws that ball right where the receiver doesn't have to slow down to catch it. So that's why we kind of pushed him way to the top. There's just too many things. And then here's a guy that's been to the Heisman finalist 3 years in a row, and that's a tribute to his consistency over his career, where a lot of these guys, I mean, they're so up and down, it's scary.
We are talking to Dan Shonk of OurLads.com, OurLads.com for the best draft coverage. So, Dan, love to ask you about the receivers in this class. Calvin Ridley, often slated to go number one by many mocks. But I don't know, when I look at him, his total productivity in college, albeit for Alabama, wasn't that outrageously good. And then he's not that big. Are you a Ridley fan, and how else do you stack up the receivers?
Yeah, I'll tell you, that's the thing. There's not a lot of sexy picks early with these receivers. Ridley, we like, and I'll tell you, David, the reason you don't see him with big stats is Jalen Hurts. I mean, yep. Jalen was just, you know, he's inaccurate. He threw the ball over the top of Ridley several times, overthrew him, and the quarterback play for Ridley the last couple of years has been, frankly, pretty ugly. But as a freshman now, he did some good things. And when he gets his chance to get his hands on the ball, he is exciting and he's electric. And we expect him to run well at the combine. James Washington from Oklahoma State, now he's built like a running back. And he's probably going to go later in the first round, but gee whiz, I tell you, when he catches that ball, he makes things happen. He tracks that ball great over either shoulder. He's got really good hands and a tough kid that will go underneath. And he's what we call a three-level receiver, which, you know, he catches those slants and then the big routes in the middle and then he can go deep. So, and then got Christian Kirk over at Texas A&M, who's just a flat-out speed guy, 4.35. We'd expect him to be, you know, one of the fastest guys in the combine this year. I mean, he's a track guy that can just smoke it and catch it. So feel good about that. But then, you know, like I was talking about in the second round, you got guys like Cortland Sutton, Dante Pettis from Washington, who's an excellent return guy. Simi Cobb's a big receiver from Indiana. Anthony Miller from Memphis. So there's going to be Auden Tate could be in that group in that second round. So there's going to be a lot of second-round receivers, too, that will bring really good value to whoever drafts them.
And Dan, looking at the running backs, obviously Saquon Barkley is going to go. He'll go in the first round. But then you've got someone like Rashad Penny from San Diego State who's going to benefit from Bryce Love staying another year in school. Do you see any more of the running backs going in the first round? And who would come after Saquon Barkley?
Well, I'll tell you, you know what? It could go one of two ways. If a team falls in love with one of these guys, obviously they'll go in that first round. But if they don't, we're going to be loaded in the second. Mm-hmm. But I think Darius Geis is going to be right up there, LSU running back that put on a big show a year ago when he rotated with Fournette. And then this year he racked up some big yards, a speed guy that gets his shoulders over his toes and things like that, and really hasn't had a chance to show what he can do with his hands yet. But you know what? Pittsburgh's sitting there, and they got to be wondering, hey, are we going to take Le'Veon mm-hmm. Bell or going to listen to him, you know, whine and stuff, even though he's a great running back? They got him in the second round. Are they going to go ahead and go with a guy like Geis late in the first? Will they go with Nick Chubb or a Ronald Jones or a Kerryon Johnson from Auburn or, you know, Sony Michel from Georgia? So they've got a lot of options. I think most of those guys. And then Rashad Penny, here's a big running back that just all he did. In fact, in the summertime when we studied him after, you know, Pumphrey was there a year ago, then he got drafted by the Eagles in the fourth round, and we always thought Penny was better than Pumphrey. Penny got his chance to play, and we think that if he falls out of the second, it's going to be a real steal for somebody in the third. But again, here's a guy that can catch the ball, no question about it. He can be he's a return guy. Plus, he's got some size to him, and you know, so I think that some team, you know, may entertain him in the middle of that second round.
We are talking to Dan Shonka of rlads.com. So positionally, what you've talked a bit about offensive linemen and the strength and the depth there for the second round, but what would you grade as the top positions in this year's draft?
Boy, I tell you, running backs got to be right up there, yep. David. I mean, it's really strong. I mean, all the way through, you keep looking. And then the defensive line, I think the interior guys, I mean, if you like under tackles, for instance, one-gap guys, this draft is loaded with super quick guys like the Kyle Williamses of the world. That, you know, he's up at Buffalo, had a great career there. Guys that can really just one gap it and get up the field and be disruptive. There's quite a few guys like that. The big power guys, there's probably not as many like the Vita Vea from University of Washington or Tim Settle from Virginia Tech, who 335 pounds, you know, 6'3", just built like an Angus bull. And so I think there's more of the under-tackle guys, but, hey, B.J. Hill from North Carolina State, Deron Payne from Alabama, Harrison Phillips, the super productive guy that – now, how can you lead your team in tackles when you're a defensive line, interior lineman? Well, Harrison Phillips did, so – I mean, he had over 100 tackles, and the last guy to do that was Ndamukong Suh. And I'm not saying they're the same guy, but, you know, here's another guy that's super productive. So I think that interior group, and there's some good defensive ends, but more in the 3-4 area as opposed to a 4-3 pass rusher. There's, you know, because they're undersized, and we usually cut them off at about 265 are usually the 4-3 ends, and then the 3-4 guys, the end, the pass rushers there are, you know, under that size.
That's Dan Shonka of Our Lads. Dan, thanks so much for joining. We're going to have to get you back as we get closer to the draft. Really appreciate your joining the Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Dan Shonka of Our Lads.
Well, thank you very much. Great being with you and Carla tonight, David. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dan. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
What did you just say? What the hell?
It's time for He Said, She Said on The Boss and the Gloss.
Oh, yes, this is the award-winning, highly acclaimed, much-anticipated He Said, She Said segment. And one thing we
promised... You just like to argue with me. That's why you like
it. Well, no, no arguments today. In fact, what we did decide that we weren't going to talk about
any... Oh, yeah, no controversy.
No more controversy. We haven't talked about any of the controversies that are out there. We haven't talked about them in hour two. However, some are going to come up when we do the He Said, She Said. This is the segment where we hear what sports luminaries have to say about a big sports topic of the week. And this time, we're going to start with the head coach of the Detroit Pistons, Stan Van Gundy, who had a lot to say about the whole controversy of the NCAA and payment to players and the recruiting scandal. Ron?
That were against them coming out. Made a lot of excuses, but I think a lot of it was racist, quite honestly. And the reason I'm going to say that is nobody, I've never heard anybody like go up in arms about, oh my God, they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league baseball, or they're letting these kids come out and go play minor league hockey. They're not making big money, and they're white kids primarily, and nobody has a problem. But all of a sudden now, you've got a black kid that wants to come out of high school and make millions. That's a bad decision. But bypassing college to go play for $800 a month in minor league baseball, that's a fine decision? What the hell is going on? The NCAA is one of the worst organizations, maybe the worst organization in sports. And they certainly don't care about the athletes. And they're going to act now like they're just appalled by all these things going on in college basketball. Please. You know, come on. It's ridiculous. And then it's all coming down on coaches.
Wow. Stan Van Gundy, he pulled no punches there. But he raises some interesting points, does he not?
He's a really smart guy, and he's not afraid to say it. I had never thought about that as being racist, but I don't disagree with him.
Yeah, the fact is people have gotten up in arms a long time with the idea of a basketball player going straight from high school to pros, yet in baseball there is not all that controversy.
Mm-mm, not at all.
And it is notable. NBA is primarily African-American. MLB is primarily Anglo. Mm-hmm.
He brings up a great point. And I've heard a lot of commentary today that, and every commentary I've heard agrees with Stan Van Gundy. Hmm. So really, you know, kudos to him to bring that to light.
Pretty thought-provoking and certainly raises questions on how the NCAA can enforce that rule, the one-year requirement at the NCAA level. It's very interesting.
It is interesting, and I think Mark Emmert, who heads the NCAA, I mean, he's going to be coming under a lot. I mean, he does come under a lot of fire for a lot of things, but especially given the NCAA basketball, the FBI probe, all that's going on. I mean, you wonder, are you really representing these, quote, student athletes well? What is this, a money-making machine? Are you really about the kids? And I think that's another thing that Stan Van Gundy is bringing up. So lots to think about.
A lot of money at stake there, and that's crazy, the controversy.
Big, big, big-time money.
All right, let's go to our next, he said. This is Isaiah Thomas, the former Celtic, former Cavalier, and current Laker, talking about his departure from the Cavaliers.
I was surprised. I didn't think they would pull the trigger that fast with 15 games. But, again, it's a business. And the Cavs were, I mean, they were in panic mode. We were losing a lot. And I think they felt like they needed to make a move, and they basically cleared house. I have no hard feelings against Cleveland. It just didn't work out, and that just happens.
They did pull the trigger pretty quickly, 15 games. Isaiah Thomas really never got his legs underneath him, literally or figuratively, to contribute to the Cavaliers team.
And everything he said was spot on. I mean, he called a spade. Yes, they were in panic mode. There's no doubt about it, because they pulled a big trade. I mean, it was a lot of people involved in this. I think with Isaiah Thomas, you know, they knew that his health was going to be subpar coming off that hip injury. But I don't think what happened with him, and I appreciate, he was very classy in that interview. He didn't throw anybody under the bus. He said what was exactly true. There was panic mode. He didn't say it was a bad deal. I think he's really enjoying his time with the Lakers. Obviously, LeBron and the Cavs have new energy with their new lineup. But I think Thomas ended up being nowhere near the player that Cleveland thought they were getting as far as his health, fitness, you know, even personal, and his impact on the court. It just didn't end up being what they had hoped. So, you know, he was accurate. It is a panic mode. And when you didn't get what you hoped for, you trade. That's what you do. it is a business decision. So kudos to him. He said the right thing, and he said it, you know, with class and didn't throw anyone into the bus, but he's right.
Fair enough. All right, our next, he said, is someone who did not say the right thing. It was Mark Cuban talking to Dr. J about the need for the Mavericks to tank. Let's listen to Mark Cuban.
Probably not supposed to say this, but like, I just had dinner with a bunch of our guys the other night, and here we are. We, you know, we weren't competing for the playoffs. I was like, look, losing is our best option. You know, Adam would hate to hear that. But I, at least I sat down and I explained it to him. And I explained what our plans were going to be this summer, that we're not going to tank again. This is like a year and a half of tanking, and that was too brutal for me.
Well, he got one thing right when he said, oh, I probably shouldn't be saying this.
Yes.
So that's how he got that $600,000 fine slapped on him by Adam Silver.
A costly interview. And Dr. J, the guy asking the questions, he certainly did not intend for Mark Cuban to have to spend $600,000 on that interview.
But what do you think? Do you think Cuban's right?
Oh, well, I first of all, I think Cuban is right that it's in the best interest of the Mavericks to tank at this point. I think the Mavericks are out of it. I think that they should be losing. I think that advances the whole of the franchise. However, he should never have said those words. And Adam Silver's right to fine him. That's sort of conduct unbecoming, words that cannot be said. There's no place for people talking out loud about intentionally losing. It undermines the integrity of the sport.
Well, the commissioner of a major sport is supposed to protect the, you know, protect the shield, protect the brand. And Adam Silver says, you know, those are public statements that are detrimental to the NBA.
Yeah, they are.
And duly noted, $600,000 out of Cuban's pocket.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago, at least it doesn't seem that way to me, that the whole lottery system was created to prevent tanking. And yet, tanking is existing just now, maybe even on a larger scale, because there are more teams that can find their way into the lottery, and there's a slotting within the lottery. But I can remember way, 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 way back when there was no lottery, and the draft order was simply set by your one-loss record, and there were teams tanking to get that best pick or the number two pick. Mm-hmm. They were all slotting themselves, and the lottery is supposed to prevent it, but it clearly has not.
No, but you know, you're too young to remember that.
I remember that very well, I might say.
I know. And that lottery system is going to need to be massaged and worked out, because secret's out, right?
All right. Our next, he said, she said, is from Swaggy P. And I will let you set this one up, Carla.
I love this. This is the postgame presser for Nick Young, Swaggy P, shooting guard for the Golden State Warriors, after his 16 points in 18-minute game win over the Oklahoma City Thunder on Saturday night. Love hearing this. This is great.
They put you on Westbrook a lot, and you did pretty well. But how have you really worked on your defense thus far? I know you're known for scoring, but, you know, to you know, do that on the other end.
You know, I think it was all in, like, the outfit I wore today, you know. As y'all could see, you know, it was dance fever for me tonight, you know. So felt good. You know, I just went out there and did my best. Yeah.
Nick, in terms of the, you know, the competitiveness, the chippiness, did this kind of feel like a playoff game?
Yeah, you know, as you could tell from the outfit I wore tonight, it was a playoff atmosphere. Felt like John DeVolta, so felt good doing it tonight.
Your outfit tonight.
Yeah.
How did you make that decision?
You know, I had a dream, and it just came to me. I was like, you know what, it's cold outside. Let me show my chest, you know, and yeah. And I was dancing inside my dream, so it was like a disco ball. I was like, dang, what does that mean? What do this disco ball mean in my dream? Then John DeVolta came and was like, just wear that. Wear that. He picked out my outfit, and, you know, that's what happened. Thanks, John.
Wow.
He definitely did not say nope to the dope. That's what I'm thinking. Oh, my gosh. Do you love this? I mean, I love me some dance fever.
Sure.
I mean, I can John Travolta like the best.
No,
one,
you dance, woman.
That was, I mean, I love to dance. Do you just love that? How refreshing was that? You know what this reminded me of? Adam Rippon, the U.S. figure skater.
Yes.
And after he like nailed his short program, and Andrea Joyce is interviewing him and says, you know, what was it tonight? Well, I think it was your statement necklace, Andrea Joyce. I mean, it's kind of the same thing, deflecting right. it to the wardrobe.
Right.
I kind of loved it. I thought it was really pretty funny.
Well, I don't have dreams like he has dreams.
Well, yeah, Those were some.
There are
kind
no
of
disco
dreams.
Balls in my dreams.
But I'd like someone to analyze that dream of his that John, as in Travolta. Aha!
Play it, Ron.
Spoke to him. Get down.
Carla, stay down. No, you need to do the show. No more dancing.
I'm so glad we're not on television.
She can't stop. Well, you don't have dreams about your wardrobe, do you?
No, I have dreams about Swaggy P. John Travolta in a disco ball.
Well, fantastic. For the record, Carla always wears black and silver in honor of the Raiders. You are honoring your tradition tonight.
I am. Got to keep it real.
Whether anybody believes me or not, who knows, but I can certainly assert it.
We're on radio. Yes. That's right. I got a face and an outfit for radio.
Okay, we have delved into controversy, but I understand our last he said comes from you, Culver, and it's a happy message.
It's definitely a happy message.
Okay, right,
let's
we want
tee
happy.
It up for us, Ron. Let's hear it.
This is from the 69th U.S. Open Bowling Championship.
Wait a minute.
PBA.
The PBA. Now, the 69th, does that mean that happened recently or?
In 2012.
Okay, 2012.
In 2012, and one of the all-time greats in bowling, I know you guys have followed his career closely, is Pete Weber.
Pete Weber.
And he dropped this little nugget on us that happened on this day in 2012.
Okay.
Strike to claim it. A strike to claim it. And he got it!
Yes! That is why I did it. That's another five. Are you kidding me? That's right. Who do you think you are? I am.
Wow.
No idea still to this day what that means. Who do you think you are? I am.
Well, it's one of those quotes. Can you remember where you were when you first heard that?
Who do you think you are? I am.
Right,
I love that.
I was literally sitting right here the first time I heard that.
Well, I am sitting here at the first time I've heard it. But Carla, of course, she's watched the PBA for years.
You know what? I'm just not going to give that up here. That's my secret.
Amazing. That was a nice. And first of all, it was the one quote tonight that had the requisite beep. We always need a beep.
I know.
Involved,
Ron, I love how
to block out the language.
Honestly, I mean, he didn't say anything too terrible. It was a lot of GDs in a short amount of time. So I was like, one's fine. You know, five of them is a little too much.
Yeah, this is a family show here.
Yeah.
Maybe he was trying to copy what you said last week, like, do you know who I think I am? Maybe that's what he was really trying to get across.
I think maybe I was trying to copy him, and I just got the quote wrong.
Well, he makes an impression, does he not?
Oh, Pete Weber. Okay, we're going to remember that one. So this is the anniversary of that epic statement, is that right?
Yep, on this day, 2012.
All right, well, there we go. Happy anniversary,
flashback.
Pete Weber, and an epic statement for us.
A throwback. All right, we've covered the landscape here. This he said, she said segment was pretty broad. We covered it everywhere.
And I like ending on happy with Swaggy P and, well, Swaggy P and another Swaggy P and Pete Weber.
Yes, another one.
Two Swaggies, yeah.
Sure. Awesome. All right, we will come back and empty out the notebook. Our closing thoughts when we return. This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's David Gow and Carla Dawson.
So one of the fun things about this closing segment, we get to empty out the notebook, the things we wanted to cover but never got to cover. And there were some memorable quotes that came out of the Olympics that we need to go back and revisit. I'm going to begin really with Adam Rippon, because Adam was a standout guy. Everybody noted him, right? He got a lot of attention, but it was most notable after the Olympics, just after he'd competed and done so well, he was most concerned about the fact that he was eating too many McDonald's meals. He was going to McDonald's too much. He was worried about whether it would destroy his washboard abs.
Well, that is hashtag Olympic problems, right?
That was Olympic problem big
classic
time.
Classic.
Now, he's on your list of things to say,
yes,
right?
Yes, two quotes of his are on my list of favorite quotes. The first one, I love this, and I think we might have to adopt it just in case we have any hate social media geared towards the boss and the gloss. Quote, haters are fans in denial. Is that the best?
That's optimistic, isn't
it? I love that. I'm going to say that about anybody who's not nice to me.
That's turning a negative into a positive, yes.
That's right. And then the other one, this is what I love about Adam Rippon. He is so relatable. He just says, flat out, I'm a hot mess. Who hasn't said that in their life? Well, don't say you.
Ron? He's a hot mess. That's what he said.
Or don't you have days where you feel like, I am just a hot mess? I feel that way.
Why do you think I wear a hat?
Duly noted.
All right, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, I like it.
I guess I'm going to come back. Well, Ron, you've got one you want to...
Well, I can't really repeat my quote because it's a series of beeps.
Beep.
This is what Chargers fans do.
No, but my was the overall reaction from Sean White after he won the gold medal when he first saw his parents. Mm. You know, I will hope that, you know, if my sons, either any of them, are in that position someday, that they have the same reaction as he did. Where, I mean, you know, his face matched his hair color.
It did. That was great.
And then when he saw his dad, that's where all the beeps come in. And that was one of those moments that truly, truly will always stand out.
I agree. And you know what's cool about that moment? It's not like it's the first Olympic medal he's won. And I think it was the sweetest because it came after a lot of adversity.
I think that one meant more to him than any of the others.
I do too, because he didn't medal in Sochi. He didn't make the platform.
David, what about you? You got any other favorites?
Well, I might go back to not what he said, but the way he presented himself, Johnny Weir. He won my heart.
He won my heart too.
Maybe because I sit next to the Gloss each week, and he's a Gloss
as
well.
Way
he looks
gloss.
Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's your rival in glossiness.
He's my spirit animal.
He is. You've been listening to The Boss on the Gloss. Coming up next, Coach Les will be with us here on SB Nation Radio.